Minister, Deputy Minister, ladies and gentlemen, we want to appreciate again that we have the presence of both the Minister and the Deputy Minister in the Portfolio Committee today. We appreciate that very much. You are all welcome. We are going to start with the proceedings of the meeting. I will just outline the procedure for the meeting and what is the agenda that is for us. Because it's a tight agenda, I will also have to try as much as possible to move faster. We do not have spare time today. On the agenda, we do have three areas that we're going to focus on. Those who do have the agenda with them, the agenda that is item number one, we'll be having the briefing by the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the Public Service Remuneration Commission. The second briefing will be the briefing by the Deputy Minister of Public Service and Administration on Community Development Workers. The third briefing will be by the State Information Agency on Social State of Readiness. And we'll just be evaluating how far are we as legislators. I would really want to indicate that particularly on issues of the presidential public service remuneration, it is an area that the minister is going to give us a brief, highlight us and indicate where are we. We all know that it stems from the State of the Nation address and where the president also pronounced on this matter. It is from the side of the committee that we will be getting details in terms of how far are we going in terms of what the president has announced. On the community development workers, we know that there have been presentations in the past and there have been discussions and there were issues that were raised, sending from COCTA into Tucson centers. We will be then also highlighting how far are we as a moment. And we had been clarified that the Deputy Minister has been largely working in this area and that we're going to get a proper brief in terms of where we are. On the third area, we have the State Information Technology Agency, and most of you know that we've been having discussions that have been following one after the other, starting with when we had a meeting with the National Treasurer, whereby we discussed the integrated financial management system and also the initiative of the CEO from CISA that had been taken. In the last meeting we had, the minister also clarified, you know, the process that they undergone to ensure that they get the best and also able in order to take us forward on driving the issue of people. And therefore, we are looking forward to all these briefs because it's part of the issues that the committee has been raised for clarity, and part of it will be identifying and generating progress. Before we proceed, let me highlight, I have one apology in front of me here, and it is the apology from Honorable Mohali, who is not well, who left yesterday because she is not well. This is one apology, the only apology I have for today, and I think we can be able to proceed with the meeting. Okay, so we will start with the first presentation. I'm also given an indication that the minister is not well as she's present with us, and therefore she won't be able to stay with us till to the end of the meeting. But she managed to be part of the first part of the meeting. And therefore, once we see the minister leaving, we should know that an apology has already been presented for us. And we appreciate that even if she was not well, she made it for the meeting. Can we then, without a waste of time, start with a briefing by the minister on the Presidential Public Service Remuneration Commission? And I will hand over to the minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, if you will allow me just
approach of music is part of your briefing, the long talk after CEO Peter. As I indicated to you, my knees were bruised because I had to beg and pick and scream to come and join us. And I want to say to him in front of all of you that Sita is greatly enhanced by having a member of his stature come to join us. He really agreed to stay with us for a year. I'm hoping that we'll be able to present him together in our future, but all of us he leaves when we are certain that Sita is on EDQ and he will be the one who leads the delegation on the yesterday, I thought I should make this remark because this is a matter of public concern before I get into the Remuneration Commission. I know that it is an elective mood that takes over from all of us. But I was very concerned yesterday when a member of the DA, having started off by complimenting the minister, then went on to say that, in fact, we cannot rely on any study. Fairy tales about what's going to happen, and I thought that it's important that at all times, even when we engage, honesty must be at the root of all things that we say. We want to build an honest, clean service, public service. We will lead by example. There are many areas that we can engage on which we might disagree, but on this one, we're in complete agreement, and I thought it was dishonest that a message should be put out in that fashion. And what he was saying was indicative of the fact that the Liberal Party, the DA, would have preferred their own bill, which I have with me now, which is the business interest of employees bill, which they introduced to Parliament as a private member bill. They had asked me earlier, in my tenure as minister, whether I was going to consider this bill, and I indicated to them that it would be very interesting that I have this because it would enrich the discussion when the bill comes to Parliament, because in fact we've already gone a long way in preparing the PEN bill. The PEN bill is an extensive bill which covers all the things that we've been talking about. It's a bill of something like 130 pages. It's available because it has been put out for public comment. And the DA has engaged with this bill, which is very expensive. And I have since received a letter from the leader of the DA, Ms. Helen Zillis, saying that in view of the nature and extent of the bill and the importance of the bill and what we're doing, she and her party are asking for an extension of hold over and above the time that has been given. I've been written to her on the 14th of June today, but of course, because we're so concerned that we should all be at one in this bill, we will give the necessary extension. We've given, therefore, the extension of the closure of comments on the bill to the 31st of July, because we were requested by the DA. I think that it's important that I make this notice so that we don't go on into an election mode on things that are basically have been explained to show a level of dishonesty that I do not appropriate to the members of the committee, but I think that the honourable members of them should then say and they should keep it that way. Thank you. Jefferson, the portfolio committee and I have been seized with a matter of the remuneration agreement that we reached with Labour. That was the first report that I gave to the committee to indicate that we've had very extensive but very fruitful negotiations with Labour. At the end of it, we had agreed on a number of things. And one of the things that had been a common problem in our negotiations with Labour is the fact that they felt that certain sectors, professional sectors within the public service, were not recognized for what they were worth, and they were not given the remuneration that they would put them at the same level as the front desk or office staff that we have in the public sector. We undertook, because this had been a recurring problem, we undertook that we would persuade the president to open up this discussion and consider the possibility of establishing a remuneration commission so that we satisfy ourselves as government, as representing the employer and labor and the country, that in fact we are paying our professional services at the level that we have worked out is possible within the coffers of the state, and the only way that we could do this was to establish a remuneration commission. The president considered this matter and completely agreed with it on the basis that he is in fact very concerned about the level of education within society and the way that teachers are perceived in society. He'd like to encourage teachers to do more. He goes on, as you know, about his passion for education and making sure that we can put education at the center of everything that we do in a developmental state. And therefore, he was very willing to ensure that the state can put its first foot forward and make sure that we do our bit in investigating this matter. Now, you will also know that at some time, teaching profession had been complaining that they are paid 0.5% less than the other labor unions. And I'm told that there is a history behind this. But we indicated to them that we would prioritize them for the reason that the state regards them as such an essential service, and also because we know that they have this grievance, and I'm not sure whether in fact it is shared by the state as a grievance, but we will investigate it nonetheless. So on the occasion of his state of nation, the president did indicate that he was going to establish a remuneration commission. The president has gone ahead to complete the terms of reference of the remuneration, and I'd like to quote very briefly. The commission is appointed to investigate remuneration and conditions of service in the public service and public entities listed in Schedule 3 A and 3 C of the Public Finance Management Act 1999, number 1, 1999, with the remuneration of educators receiving priority attention, including measures relating to organizational development, job evaluation, grading, recruitment, appointment and promotion, human resource planning, and performance management systems, policies, practices in the public service. The remuneration commission is so structured that in fact it will take comments from society. It will allow us to gauge from the comments we receive from society whether in fact society feels that we are getting value for money from our public service, and we think it's going to be an extremely useful exercise to go through this. The Remuneration Commission has since been appointed. It is headed, and I had hoped that this would be done by the President, but seeing that I am here, I might as well do that. It is headed by the Honourable Charles Andile Nyongo as chairperson. It is supported by various structures. The structure immediately below Charles Nyongo, a set, for a better word, assisting commissioners. These are drawn from the various sectors in the public service that have an interest. We have a representative who has been drawn from the education sector. We have representatives that have been appointed by labor. We have a representative that has been appointed by the Minister of Finance. We await a representative appointed by the Minister of Health. We have also put together a team of people that we think have the requisite skills to assist the commission, and they will form the secretariat, and we are quite convinced that together with these teams of people, the judge will be able to execute his job within 8 months. We've established the commission, the premises from which they will operate, and all the structures that are necessary for it to start operating. Now here comes the problematic issue, Chairperson. The problematic issue is that on just the day that the commission would have been announced and it have started working, SAT decided that a better place for them was outside Parliament instead of in the classroom. So what we decided to do was enter the fray, call a meeting We've reached a point in our negotiations with Statues that they were making two demands with the city venture. They withdrew the demand to ask that the minister should resign because they have no authority to do that. However, they remain concerned about their own allegations around the duty of basic education. We on our part took up the responsibility of referring the matter to the Public Service Commission for investigation. Should the Public Service Commission find that there is a case to investigate the DG, they will let us know. On their part, SATU indicated that they would withdraw their protest and they would put away any other garment that they might have wanted to show out there, which was really unseemly. And as soon as we have settled that matter, the commission will start. It has delayed us. The strike has delayed us by more than 2 months, which is a pity. So then the 8 months from out, we are now counting from the time that we start. I am meeting Kusatu on Friday, and I believe that we can strike some tomorrow, and hoping that we can strike some agreements because this is an essential part of the work that we promised that we would do. Beyond the next 10 months, I don't know if we still have the space to do this in the environment that we had hoped to do, or need to do, check us in. Basically, that's what I'd wanted to introduce to you. I had hoped that John Sandilo would be here, but as soon as he is able to start his work, he will present himself here, and perhaps acquaint himself with members of the portfolio committee, and indicate how he intends to do his work. He's an experienced judge, as you know, he's a chief justice. He was the chief justice, and he has since been involved in a number of cases of arbitration all over the world, and he has made himself available for the period of a year to assist us with this matter. The commission, of course, has part of its responsibility to report to the portfolio committee. Therefore, we would want to account with yourself the regularity that you might want them to continue with what it is that they are doing, and in view of the time factor, we propose that perhaps they come once when they are ready to start, so that you see the totality of them, and perhaps once again before they do the final wrapping up of their work, because you also be a very important resource for them to gauge whether or not the work that they're doing is an important one. The Minister of Finance has insisted on him or on appointing somebody who has been dealing with wage negotiations in the past, because he feels that the wage bill is absolutely essential. Any tampering with the wage bill would affect the fine balance that we have so far. So he has proposed that we take Advocate Sheikh. Advocate Eunice Sheikh is the chief negotiator of SAGA and works with it very, very closely. The other members of the commission who will be supporting the commission are Dr. Miriam Altman. We have Ambassador Bangomisi Sisingo, the Lieutenant General Kasitaha. We have Advocate Zungulu Tumbeni. We have Dr. Mark Wisman. We have Advocate John Wilson and Mr. Anton Oscar. Those will be supporting committee members. And the other members that have been appointed by the ministers will also be announced in due course before we start the work of the commission. Just listen in short, and in view of the difficulty we have, that is all I can say. I had hoped that by now the commission would have been fully in their work. The president has signed the proclamation and the minute, and it is ready for tailing as soon as it is possible to do that. The terms of reference are on the board for all to see, and there is a presentation that we prepared for the perusal. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think I would really like to thank your introductory, especially if there are issues that came up where you have to hear them. You know, but most of the time, there are statements that are made and we leave them in. And as a matter of fact, trying that the public believes those issues like that. We issues that were raised in the House. I'm glad to make sure that we are not really fighting over these issues, but we are clearly fighting that these are the matters, and I'm sure members will agree that this is how we've been proceeding with the areas of community. So another comment of the government minister, and it was an ugly comment that was read out in public, I think. I'm sure most of you know the government. You know what we're talking about. And also, I was glad to see how the Minister for Education took the issue of the government that is made education. You know, if it was someone else, it would be angry and, you know, bad and painful thing to do. There's one point that I just need to raise, but I wouldn't like to focus on that because my issue for today is that I would like us to deal with the business of the day more than anything else. The House has been very, very interested and we've got presentations very late as well. And that's why you find that there's the distribution of presentations. Just to emphasize, it is important for us to get the documents of us as Parliament, which assists us to do the preparations for the comments. When documents are actually brought late, they actually inconvenience the committee. And therefore, they emphasize that I request that there be cooperation at that level. And thank for the entire prefer minister. Would you like someone to take us from the briefing room and just go through it at all in time?
I think the reason is that it would take too much time for us to go through that. The essence of what I have said is covered in the detail of the briefing, and members can go through that. Just as in my sincerest apologies that once again we received the documentation late. It will certainly go into the performance assessment of the officials that are responsible. But it's not the first time that you've complained. It's completely unacceptable, and I received mine on time. I was not aware that you all came late, but I've taken note of that, and if they value their job in public service, it will happen again.
Okay, and then the minister, yes, of course, we have a tight time. We did request as well that if the list of who is present can be just sent to us so that we can also go through it without necessarily doing individual introduction. And then that you already raised also part of the commissioners will be part of this because these are slightly who will be participating and also who's present at the moment. We really appreciate that. It's also going to save some time. Members, members want to interact with the issues that we're seeing, that needs to be asked. I think I'm opening up for members to interact, ask questions of clarity and also comments. I've seen Honorable Detroit stand up, Honorable Lekembe, in that order, starting with you, Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. I'm just having a look here. See, we have eight members of the commission, eight commissioners. Seems a fair number. And there are 10 key areas. If you look at slide number it's support stop number 12, it's about 10 key areas, expert areas. So I think that at least 10 people. In a managerial position there, and of course, depending on the time frame we have to complete this, I was just wondering how many people would be working for the commission and the budget allocated to it. The other question I would have is the proclamation date, because I see here that they can start working as soon as it's being published. And then then the subsequent time frame after that, are we looking at months or years? We had a terrible experience on the municipal level with that task, what is it called, task, which is actually a TASK, it was called, I'm speaking on a correction. It's actually, ironic name, because they never seem to finish the task in 10 years. So I'm just looking at the time frame we have here. Is it months, 34 months, 18 months, whatever? And then the weakness, I would dare say that there could be a weakness in the system. If you would ask who's feeding into the system, We have a lot of departments, entities, and all different. And I can see where we're going with this, with the standardizing and classification of the posts and all that. But who's going to feed into this? It's like a computer. The more junk you feed in, the more junk you get out. Here we could have very good commissioners with a good staff and a good plan and everything, but the feeding into this is coming from where? I'm just shivering, you know, if I look at the performance of some of the, I'm not talking politics now, we all know it. I'm just shivering when I think about the performance of some of the departments and entities in what we have. And if that's a symptom of what's going on in there, how is that going to feed into this process? So those are my concerns at this point. It's early days, so I don't want to go into too much questions, but that's just the main things I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I think let's welcome the brief and the work that has been done by the department so far. I'm saying this because the president spoke of the commission, of this commission in his speech called the National Affairs in February this year. And within no time, the department has put everything that is supposed to be put together. What the department was waiting for, as per their response in one of the meetings that we had a few weeks ago, for that they are waiting, the department is waiting for the president. I think now the response that we are getting is that there is, this has already been proclaimed. That's good work that has been done by the department. I think it's important to raise that. I think secondly, the background or the briefing that the minister spoke about, I think if you follow bargaining processes in the public service, there has been issues that were raised, emanating from the OSD and everything else in terms of what is it that needs to be done in order the conditions in the public service, they do look the same. So I think that then in advancing that the commission, I think, now is going to detail the information to what we have wanted to see, including labor, in fact, wanted to see this situation. I think it's positive work that I think is important for us as Parliament to acknowledge that. I think our responsibility from now moving forward, Mr. President, I think the point that the Minister faces is that she would like a situation where before the commission starts its work, it presents itself to the committee for us to know that this is the commission which the minister spoke about on the 9th of June 2013, when it starts its work. And I think with regards to time frame, where checked the presentation, I think the anticipation is that this commission will do its work informed by the terms of reference that is actually. Because we don't just put the commission and then say, do this work without necessarily saying, these are the terms of reference that will operate on. I think it's 8 months, and the presentation says there might be an additional 2 months in order for the commission now to finalize its report. So I think I heard the minister saying that the department and the ministry wanted this to start as soon as yesterday. And the within the public service, as the president indicated, that the starting point is this. And because of that industrial action, which any worker is entitled to, then this process could start at that particular time. So the point raising here, Chair President, is that as much as I'm not saying that members might not ask their questions if there are questions, but I think what is critical for me is once the commission starts its work, ours now is the oversight in terms of, one, are they doing what they are supposed to do in form by the terms of reference as presented? That's one. Second, the pace of the work that the commission will be doing in form by the time frame that the minister will ask the commission to exercise this. So I just wanted to raise those two comments, gentlemen.
Yeah,
thanks,
Honourable
Member.
If there's nothing else, can I allow the minister to respond on the issue? Honourable Joint,
sorry, just want to add, and I don't have to interrupt the minister late again. She was bothered me from task. I actually must admit I lost track of it when I was still in that office when I left the third level of government. But I lost track. I think it never completed in 10 years or 9 years or something. It was a very, very slow process. And I understand why. Because people were doing it, were making a lot of money out of it. And the people feeding into the system was not going to benefit after it was completed. Because once you completed this, you're under the magnifying glass. You've now got tasks. Now you've got to keep on with you, you know. So this is just my concern here. I see the minister, I missed that, but I saw it now. It's 8 months that it's been going to run. But you know, I just think, minister, if you can do it in 8 months, I mean, we must give you a medal. Because with this, with the State Department, just to get to gear will take 2-3 months. And with everybody, I don't know how they're going to do it, because just with the experience on TUSC, and now with the proposed single public service incorporating the municipal sphere, it's a nightmare. I just think that 8 months maybe, I don't know where this comes from, but I'm very skeptical about it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chief Minister. Honourable Tom has been promising a medal. I from this time, if I deal with the issue of corruption, if I deal with it, I haven't seen a single one coming my way. Must be three now. But yes, I think that we are over optimistic on the issue of time frame. The problem we have is that we only have a window of 3 years between the time we negotiated with Labour and the time that negotiated settlement will end. And we had committed ourselves within this time frame to finish all these things that need to be done. And it was a very difficult negotiation, and we took it with its warts and all, because finally it was one that was very good for the economy, it was one that was very good for our stability, and in reflection it was an extremely good one. So we took it with what came with it. And it comes to an end about next year. Am I counting correctly? Mm-hmm. Now, we don't want to have been falling short of our own agreement with the unions. And it seems the point at which we accepted this, that the concerns they were raised were legitimate. The concerns, for instance, that they raised would be, I've been a teacher for 20 years. It's a professional qualification that allows me to be a teacher. My daughter is a receptionist at a premier's office and earns 3 times more than I do. There's something wrong with the public service that does not speak to what we want, it does not speak to the output. It makes sense to us. And we have never used a measurement that is scientific for all to understand how we grade jobs and what the value for money is for those jobs. We committed ourselves also when we worked on this agreement that we would want value for money. What is this value for money? We've never tested it, but we talk about value for money. We talk about productivity. We've never tested it. We've never tested it with our people. We've never checked with our people if in fact they think that teachers, for instance, are being paid sufficiently or maybe overpaid or whatever the case may be. So we took this opportunity. And of course, with every with everything comes its ups and downs. The downside to this is that we prioritize the teachers, and this is where we are. But what we wanted to do was to grade, not just look at the whole picture. Grade. This is the profession that a teacher will have, or anybody will have, with so much backing of either a professional qualification, with so much experience, and this is the kind of salary that particular teacher will have. And use that to make sure that it speaks to the entire public service. What does
receptionist there. Well, how did we come to that determination? Has it been graded and is it international or locally, nationally recognized as a proper grade system? And when they raised it with us, it made sense. It made perfect sense, and we went ahead and we did what we needed to do. So the teaching profession would be used as a benchmark against which we would say, this is what we are going to give to anybody. This is the salary that we have worked out and researched is the equivalent of what the state will get out of this particular person, and would use that for another as well. We're now running out of time. At my last interaction with the president, he was saying, look, if we're not able to have an early settlement with Tatu, we might consider prioritizing the nursing profession so that we are able to make progress on this matter. I have put that to Tatu, and he will come back to me tomorrow on this matter. If they're still insistent on their own demands, then we will try another sector. We prioritize them because they are an essential, for us, essential sector. We'll try another sector, but we must, by the time we get to the next negotiation, test out our word. We're only as good as our word is. And we promise we're going to do this, and this is what we have to do. You're asking about what is going to be the feeder system. When the judge comes, you will find that in the slide, page 13, my page now, the chairperson will determine the methodology of conducting the work that he is going to do. We've been in consultation with him. We're quite certain we will be able to do the work in time that it has been given. But more importantly, to give the society the opportunity to say what they think is the value and productivity of the public service, or any level of public service. But when he gets here, he will have worked up the methodology that he is going to use. There has been a lot of depth of study right now that has gone into that. We also do have results of other remuneration commissions which we are using to put together. The people who are going to support the commission are in themselves have all of those criteria that we want out of commissioners. So they are vested with the necessary information that we need, and we hope that they'll provide the correct information to the commission. And he will be here himself. He will indicate how he wants to proceed with this. He's dealt with very extensive cases before, and he's done it in record time. I have no doubt that when he has his money to eat, he will do exactly what he needs to do. He's interested in getting his own secretary because he says he works against the clock, and we allowed him to do that. Eight months is a bit short, but it will give us an indication of where we're going. We don't want to go into eternity. I mean, God forbid that the DA should take over this country in 2014. I mean, the whole thing will be thrown out of the window. So we don't want to be looking into something that will not be productive. So we want to make sure that within our administration, we have completed our commitment. No, I know that you absolutely don't need to worry. That's why I am higher on my thing. The question that was asked by Honourable Cameron, so the budget is 25 million. The budget we put aside is 25 million, and we hope that it will be sufficient. The proclamation has been prepared. It will be gazetted as soon as the president has certified himself that the labour problems around Satu are having done. And I want to thank Honourable Ganyan for the words of encouragement that he has put there, and we depend on the support that we get from the portfolio committee, and I think that we get done. 8 months is what we are aiming for, and we will have some measurements take by 8 months, unfortunately. Honourable Williams, the court is his mouth person curled up in disbelief. And he shouldn't curl up his mouth.
He knows when.
No, but then I still put it in his...
I'm absolutely dying.
Yes.
I leave the scope and the interpretation and the founders of commission with you. It is not a classified document,
yes.
So members are free to go through it hope you don't have presidential ministers because that's when it's classified.
That's when it's classified.
That is classified. But the
point is that it is related. No, I think it was good, Honourable Member, to draw those questions forward. It brought extra clarity, and we really appreciate the brief minutes. We can see that there's work that has been done, and we appreciate also that the department does take an initiative to brief the committee, the department itself, you know, in terms of the work that is already proceeding, especially since it was also pronounced in the state of the edition address. And thanks for all those different ministers. Honourable members, we're going to proceed. We have seen that we still have two other items that we need to delve into, and we all have the interest of finding out the entire briefing and where we are currently. Where it is the Tucson, it is the CDW, and Deputy Minister Donald is here. She's going to take us through the committee development workers, and she's been working on the project for all the period of time. Voices are lapsing. Okay, I'm going to hand over to you as Deputy Minister Ayanda Lodo. Okay, seeing that you are now settled, all of us, I would request the State Minister to proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will not go through the whole report, but just deal with the most pertinent issues that are in the presentation. I think, insofar as the mandate of the program is concerned and the context in which the community development efforts operate is general knowledge. We've had presentations as before. So I don't think I want to go into what the PPW program is actually about for the whole movement. But just as a reminder, Chairperson, you go to slide 4. The purpose was to work with government departments and other stakeholders, and the most important thing that is to link government and the community and strengthen integration and coordination between services provided by government and access to the services by community. As I proceed, you will understand why I am emphasizing specifically on this part. And also just to say that the truth was 3,233 CDW in the country with a vacancy of 1,213. We still are developing a profile of the various wards that do not have community development workers with a view to ensuring that we are able to put provinces to get extra funding to make sure that some of those positions are filled. Some might not be a priority depending on the profile that we would please get once we have come back. And on the mandate, I think it's common knowledge of the mandate is supposed to say that I already emphasized on what it is that I think is the most important factor that shapes the existence of the community development worker. And they, the context of their existence as well, is something that is already common, but it must be also felt out that it's a very difficult environment. Working at ward, working with ward committees, working with councillors, the tensions that erupt from time to time, the vulnerability that they're exposed to or they experience from time to time, without the necessary support that comes in instances where community are unhappy with government performance, and that is government in all the nine provinces, not just the eight that run the African National Forum. So this problem persists. At the core face of all of this are the community development workers, together with the councillors of the various political parties that are operating in those wards. The program focus really is about dealing with some of the issues that the president has been raising in all the state formation addresses, I think, poverty alleviation, job creation, and narrowing the gap on inequality. So we do have programs around, projects around poverty alleviation, local economic development that is lodged with council, deepening democracy, planning and development, youth support. And all of this must say, Chairperson, is work that we, for which we are at the center of coordinating as a department. On the dealing with democracy, one of the key areas that the President has also emphasized we need to deal with is the issue of transparency, accountability, and open government resources. He appointed me as envoy to the OGP, and what we've done is that with the OGP, we have, together with the APRM program, we have decided that we are going to work hand in hand to ensure that the CCWs are part of some of the programs of government that speak directly to accountability, transparency, and open government. So all of those that you see there are the areas that we get involved in the department. On ECD, early childhood development, we work together with the Department of Social Development at the behest of the Minister of Social Development, and this has been ongoing for a bit of time. We have a slide on budget allocation, but I must say that we need to do a bit of work here, because if we are to do this vacancy, we have to get a little more money coming into the program, not only for staffing, but also for operations. You will see that the Northern Cape has the least in its budget of 37 million. You can imagine that the Northern Cape is one of the most depressed provinces in the country, but also one of the most vast and sparsely populated. So to get from point A to point B becomes a bit of a mission in certain areas. Telephone and communication is a problem in other areas, so it becomes a little more difficult to operate in an area like that. And even that budget really does not help in ensuring that work of the CPWs is carried forward in that province because of the amount of money that has been allocated to that. The program is coordinated by the Department of Public Service Administration, working in conjunction with the Department of Cooperative Governance. We are responsible for creating and the enabling environment and the creating of the legal framework, policy guidelines, and we are also benchmark short decisions and short compliance and enforcement in that regard. We've trained most of the ETWs and we're using some of the money that comes from the LGC, but we'll look at other ways of ensuring that we do capacitate to them. We've linked up with Regenesis, which is a university or an institute of higher learning, which will also be assisting in creating some of these programs to ensure that our people are capacitated. At a provincial level, the coordination really depends on province to province. In certain areas, the coordination rests with the premier. In other areas, it's with the MEC for local government. In other areas, it is very, very haphazard. But we want to be the center of that coordination to make sure that wherever it is they're located, they get full support from the DGSA in terms of ensuring that they're able to do their work and report effectively, and some of the reporting that comes through is properly collated so that we can use it as management information to develop our programs and for intervention if the intervention is not put in place for service delivery improvement. In municipalities, some of them work within the office of the municipal manager in other provinces, in other municipalities, with the office of the teacher. So again, even it's something that we would always have to be at their beck and call to ensure that we provide them with the necessary guidance to be able to ensure that the program is fully aligned and also fully functional. We have also, I think it was in 2011, Minister Boli, at that point, was to the Minister for Public Service and Administration, had requested that we engage traditional authorities to make sure that in the rural areas, the DDWs are accommodated within structures of the traditional authorities. They are then able to work with communities at the level of traditional authorities and get the kind of support that those offices are capacitated with from the state. The legal framework, and I think all of us are okay with that, but there's still a lot of work that we need to do in terms of education of the CPW program and also the formation that we would want it to take to ensure that it becomes much more effective. And I think that we'll have to come back to the portfolio committee to share that with you to say this is the direction. The position is the same, like I said, that we want to come back here. The training was the issue. Training program, and I've already spoken to that. On the consultative workshop, we had a workshop in March, on the 14th of March 2030, which was addressed by the president. We had mooted this. The first workshop was supposed to be in 2011, and unfortunately, 2011, 2012, we couldn't have that. It became a bit late. Well, by the time the president came back to us to give us a date, it was already late because we wanted to focus mainly on three areas: the state of the nation address, the budget vote, the budget speech, and also the national development plan, so that would then enable CPWs to go back to the various provinces, interact and share with community on what those three programs mean for our people, so that they can enable them to plan their lives effectively around what achievement the president has said. But following on that, then they would have to look at the state of the province address to incorporate it into work that they would be embarking on. We had to visit nine provinces in 2012. We'll continue to do that in 2013 after the March 14th address by the president, the Minister for Public Service and Administration, the Minister for Treasury, and also Minister Mayor and Minister of Oxfam. They were part of that. They made presentations like that as well. What we also did is we brought along the National Lottery Distribution Board for the simple reason that they have money, and I think this is what you would need to take up as a portfolio committee as well, because there's a lot of money that goes unspent in these programs of the National Lottery, whether it's sports, arts and culture, part of it, the agency, or it's poverty, your charity agency, the National Lottery Distribution Board, and there's a third one, but all of them do not actually spend money that is allocated to. So we thought that by bringing them on board, we'll be able then to disseminate information to community through the program that we're working on together to make sure that people are able to access the money that is available to try and address the three issues that the president always raises on crop creation, unemployment, and poverty division and narrowing the gap on inequality. It is paying off because I then had a discussion with the National Lottery Board and they've told me that they've received, since March, they've received over 100 applications so far, which they are currently processing. Some of them are because of the cut off time, but I would also need again for National Lottery to visit provinces again to tell them when it is that the next opening is going to be for applications to come in. So we hope by doing that we'll then be able to assist communities much more effectively, so that even if people are waiting for certain things to happen, they are able to help themselves through other channels like the National Lottery Board money that is over. When we did provincial visits, we visited all but three provinces. We didn't visit the Northwest, the Free State, and Limpopo. Those are the three provinces that we have to visit. In all the provinces, South Africa had presented to sports organizations. But what was interesting was that the Western Cape did not want to get involved. So for Western Cape, the CCW has not been able to get the kind of information and insight on where we want to take the project, the program to. And the Western Cape is also not going to be able to assist poor people in the Western Cape in accessing money that is supposed to be accessed by poor people from the National Lottery Board and some of the other partners that were covered in the country. I mentioned that we'll be profiling all of the work. We're in the process of doing that, of getting information and reports from all provinces, again, except the Western Cape, because they were not part of this program. But the word profiling is also going to help us to ensure that we give as much support to ensure that our people get access to services and are part of the process of ensuring that we improve in service delivery, but also have to make sure that people get information that they need with regards to services, give them physical or information that the government holds on their behalf. So some of the highlights of our achievements are put there, the resource book, the community development, the grassroots innovation book, the training that people underwent in India. We will also be looking at the Cuban program to determine whether or not it's a program that we would want to send in our community development workers to, because Cuba is one of the countries that has effectively implemented a program on community development that I think South Africa would gain a lot of insight into and also be able to influence some of us would learn from the patriotism of the Cuban people. CCWs are making an impact on the area that we have highlighted. They're assisting in the elimination of service delivery backlog and bureaucratic bottlenecks, strengthening the democratic social contract and deepening citizen participation, advocating for an organized voice of the poorers who don't depend on NGOs to be the voices of our people. We want our people to organize themselves, like in street committees and in ward committees, participate in ward committees, so that they can effectively speak directly to government and not through proxy, like non-governmental organizations. And I'm not saying here that NGOs aren't good people to talk to, but also they have money that is linked to certain conditionality that make it difficult sometimes to espouse the views properly of our people. And serving as a channel of communication between government and the people, linking communities to resources such as food, medical, and social grants, ensuring that communities are aware of and participating in various advocacy campaigns around current issues, ensuring that communities are participating in budgetary planning through platforms such as IGP. We know that South Africa is number two in budget transparency in the world. We slipped back one to the number one in last year. We slipped back, now we're number two on budget transparency because we do take our budgets to our people. I think the only problem is the feedback loop, which we are now introducing in the work that's trying to introduce for CCW. So hopefully, Chairperson, next year we will hope that we'll be number one in the world on budget transparency. The key implementation of the program is complex because of the following. Community development workers play a combined role which involves extending services, social planning, and community development. This is different practice compared to what is happening internationally. And the work is interdepartmental as well as cutting across the three spheres of government, and this is a unique situation with our CCW. The challenges from which I have started out to check has been the lack of alignment and insufficient budget, the absence of a legal framework that creates fragmentation in the implementation of the program, the management challenges in some provinces, less reporting lines in some provinces, the lack of wellness and security measures for community development workers, vast wards and insufficient numbers of community development workers in some provinces, the rate monitoring activities of CCW, and relationship problems with other stakeholders at the community level, specifically with councillors. The finalization of the regulations of the CCW, in view of the complex environment in which CCWs are operating, the problem of increasing service delivery processes is crucial to reposition the CCW program to ensure that they have clear roles and responsibilities and are located at a suitable location that will enhance their function. Increasing the roles that they play in complaint management, and also to strengthen South African initiatives for species governance and ensure that they are able to communicate with governments on the priorities, the project achievements, and challenges. And with that, we're in the process of refining our reporting template. We want it to be electronic, and we have also gotten feedback from the work of some of the provinces on the social campaign that we've requested them to do. So we have that information that we're in the process of collating, which at a later date, if you'll be happy to check them, and then be able to come and present to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David Minister, for the presentation. I know honourable members would like to engage on this one, starting with honourable William, followed by honourable Cindy, honourable Mandlega, honourable Joy, and honourable Maria. All these professors and the honourable Nathan. In that order, can we start honourable William?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got four issues I just want to raise. I just want to talk about the issue of the coordination. That seems to be a very big problem when it comes to CDWs. I personally have been involved with CDWs since about 2002. Before I came to Parliament, I was a full-time shop steward with Solomon, and before that, I was working in the office of a speaker in a municipality in Mpumalanga dealing with CDWs. And so it's the coordination, who they report to, who pays for them, where do they get their equipment from. This has been a problem for many years. And you talked about there's a lack of a legal framework with regard to CDWs. So I just want to know, is the department planning and to try to, bring some legislation forward to this committee so that we can actually just, nail it down once and for all, who they report to, how it works, and also we can sort of deal with situations like the Western Cape, where every other province has got their CDWs assisting, but it seems the Western Cape isn't coming on board. So with regard to that, I'd like to know, if the Western Cape isn't coming on board with the whole process, what is happening to the 48 million rands that have been budgeted for them, and who accounts for that money? And my last point is, in my constituency, CDWs are having a serious problem, and they came to me and asked me, how do they deal with it? Some of them have been dismissed, they've been promised to be reemployed, nothing's happening, and this is the Governor Mbeki in Mpumalanga constituency. So I just want to know, there seems to be this complete lack of who they report to. It's a very serious problem. And I just want to know, is there a plan and a time frame for when CDWs will finally be coordinated separately and locked down into that position? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable William. Honourable Kundi.
Thank you, Chair. Really, I think Honourable William, he covered me a lot. The problem is coordination. I want to know about the coordination. Who coordinates it? Especially in the Western Cape, if there's no one, I don't know whether you are using the Premier. If the Premier refuses to coordinate, why don't you use me? Because I'm here in the Western Cape. You can work on the, and my colleagues there next to me. Instead of to our people are not getting this opportunity. I think that my question is around them. What is I'm concerned about the Western Cape? That is the only problem that men didn't get this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mandela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation and the work done by the department. We appreciate the efforts in terms of the capacity of the CDW, and wish the Prime Minister on the capacitation of the CDW. But in terms of us in the rural areas, the CDW are important. If you can remember that we have a challenge in terms of departments in our areas, but now it's easy for a person to go to the department through the CDW and get assistance. So we still have challenges in terms of other departments that are not cooperative with the CDWs when they want to intervene in terms of the challenges that they are affected by the people on the ground. Last time we have seen the report by the, I don't remember the ILO, where they said South Africa has achieved in terms of assisting people in terms of social development issues, which which is part of the CDWs, by taking out people who are not managed to go to a department for achieving their social grant and IDs. So it's what we appreciate in terms of the department, and maybe would be happy if the department can take it serious, because there are challenges in terms of what Honorable William talked about in terms of monitoring and the reporting issues. And we only see their performance on the grassroots, but they are not visible, that people may know that these people are happy. But when you can look at the grassroots document, you can see in all provinces that CDW are working. Then the other challenge is politicizing CDWs, as you said, on the Western Cape part. And also in our municipalities, there are those who owned by the political parties, that when there is a strike in a municipality, the CDW are part of strike, but are not enforced by the municipality. They must also maybe come with the intervention that they must know their line of march is where they belong. So if you can assist us on that part of reporting, where are they belong, where are they reporting to our department, then we will appreciate they are part of the tribal authorities, because most in our rural areas, we use tribal authorities in terms of reporting some issues that we support on, and to assist us more on that matter. Thank you, Dr. Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Manuela. Honorable Chitoy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think when we tackle this phenomenon or this problem, we have to be honest with each other about what's happening on the ground. We have a different situation, and we have to view them differently. You can have a CDW in a ward and a municipality of a province that is being run by the same ruling party in that province, ward, municipality. Whether it's Western Cape or Gauteng or whatever, it doesn't matter. The same ruling party. You can also have a situation where the ward is in the hands of an opposition party, the municipality and the province is in the hands of a ruling party. Then you can have it, a province and a ward switched, or both the same, and so on. You know, so it's a hotspot of things. And when you get to the bottom level on the municipal level in the ward system, you get what I would call being independent from political affiliation. That is a problem, because it's okay on the national level, where we are, all the officials here. It's a little bit less okay, but it's also okay on the provincial. But once you get down to the municipal level, where these people are working, are getting onto turf of recently elected or going to be elected next time people on the ground. Okay? So there is a conflict situation built into this whole system. Never mind who employs the person. So that will always be there. And if or when the Constitutional Court will decide whether a stop through the public service is in fact constitutional, this problem will in the future not solved. It will actually make conflict situation even more severe. So we have these people here employed and paid by the province, but they are working on a local level in the wards, and they must be supervised where? My experience in 9 years in that level is that there is no report in Lyons, there's no reports to be given, you know, I never saw a report. I don't even know who's the boss in province. Supervisor. Yes. There's something here said about supervisor. I highlighted it here. Lack of supervision. Where is it? The support from municipalities are mainly on provision of workspace, assistance of transport, access on land, landbound, and stationary. They also provide mentors in the provinces where there are no supervisors employed. You know this stuff. It's all here. Now, this is the essence of the problem, being independent from political affiliation. But there is a problem with supervision, there is a problem with management, there is a problem with reports. And I understand some places where new government is over, or new party over, then maybe from the municipal manager's office to the speaker's office or whatever. I would like to know, what did Western Cape tell us? Why aren't they, you know, so keen on this? What were their reasons? But certainly you must ask them. Honorable William said 48 million. You talk about the other money. But what's going on? Why are they viewing it differently? Okay, there must be reasons for that. And that reason, I suspect, has a lot to do with some things I've mentioned. The other thing is, now you have somebody working in a ward where you have ward committees, so already all parties together. Okay, the chairperson is a elected councillor. He reports, well, in the parties with the area of the ring, I know they are reporting to the speaker's office, so he's running the show there. So here we have, again, somebody working and could be in a conflict situation with elected people. Shouldn't we see EW be elected then now? Where we draw the line? Isn't it the job of the council, the ward committees, to see if this is being happened? Where does this person report? First reporting line, shouldn't it be the ward committee, perhaps? You know? And that's been filtered through. But they're being employed by the... But who pays the salary? And last time it was the province, wasn't it? They paid the salary. Okay. So, now, something's got to be done here. But then, just when we look here at... I can't cover all the points, but I think the people here get my point. We're all intelligent people. I don't think we have to labor the points too much. But there's one thing I have to say. I just wanted to know the highlights. See here on slide 15, I would like to know what was the result. And then the other one, it was the positioning of the program, the consultative workshops, another slide, what was the result there. Certainly we can't give it here, but we can have it some other time. But that would certainly enhance the conversation. Now, the impact of community development workers. Now, I can see that a lot of things written, is sensible, but now just look at this one thing here, the second last bullet on slide number 21, ensuring that communities are aware of and participate in various advocacy campaigns around current issues. It might be a noble idea to write it like this, but this could also be an inflammatory issue, you know? Then the state cannot be involved in a political inflammatory issue. Advocating for an organized voice of the poor. Certainly we want to help the poor and we want to know about it. But once it becomes politically inflamed, we're going to have a state official being in the frontline trench of all these conflicts, paid by province. And so it goes on. Strengthening government community networks, and what does that mean? If you're very cynical, you could say, well, what is this propaganda, strengthening the propaganda networks? We must be careful, Minister. What we're dealing here with, there is already a conflict situation, because how I described it. We have to look at this very carefully, how we're going to change this, if it's going to be changed or not. We must be careful. Otherwise, the conflict situation on the ground, going back to being independent of political affiliation, is going to be a big problem. Thank you. If you could just answer me on some of those, thank you.
Okay, the next Honourable Mare.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, obviously I would very much like to know more about the criticism against the Western Cape, because I know in my constituency, my municipality is looking fine with CDWs, and they are operative there, and I mean, so obviously one needs to determine what is the problem and to what extent one can try to defuel that, because obviously eventually one must get the most out of the programs for those people. On your budget allocations for the different provinces, I would very much like to know, because at least I just want to mention, it seems like you have visited the Western Cape, which is obviously a big problem, I suppose. On the budget allocations, can you tell us what measures or mechanisms have you used to do those allocations? because it seems like in, for instance, in the case of Limpopo, that we know is a problem, and where is, you know, the your department and government has already intervened in that province. It has got the biggest allocation of nearly R1 billion, but you haven't visited that province. I would have thought that would have been the first one. So in other words, if you, what's the basis of allocation, and what is the kind of measurements to make sure that is money well spent? Because in the case of Limpopo, with the track record and with what we have heard from the department, I would have imagined that would be the first one to make sure that for the allocation of R1 billion, one must make sure that you get value for money. And if they're not doing the work, somewhere along the line, something is a huge problem. Because there must be an argument, there must be motivation, there must be reasons why the Northern Cape is the last on the list, why the Western Cape is second last, why Limpopo is first and Mpumalanga second. So if you can please just give us more of that, more in-depth information. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Mare. Honourable Mtsuma.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thank you very much to the Deputy Minister for this presentation. Finally, a very... Sorry. Thank you. I was just saying that we thank the Deputy Minister for this presentation, and it would appear that the findings are almost similar to the findings that the Portfolio Committee established when the committee visited various Tsuang centers and met with CDWs. So very little has changed. The experience at the time was that they were very unhappy people, especially when it came to the relationship between them and the municipalities, and they still prevail. One, therefore, will ask the question, why don't they fall entirely under the municipalities? Because there are these jealousies that they come and they are paid by the premier, and they submit reports from the premier, and what we picked up then was that they are seen by the municipalities in a skeptical light, that they are spies for premiers and so on. One would think that perhaps the tension will be reduced if they were to fall under directly the D part of the third sphere of government, because they are actually provided by the municipalities when it comes to space, and their activities are at community level like the council. So to reduce the conflict, one needs to reduce the scope for jealousy between them and the council. That is the big problem that I am having when it comes to relationships. For the rest, I think I've been covered largely by the speakers before me. For instance, Honourable Murray has questioned the budget allocations, which was also a bother to me. Having been told that these CDWs are intended to be distributed at a rate of one per municipality, or per ward in a municipality, one would have thought that the allocation therefore should be based on a number of wards. But from the newly released population census report, we know that Gauteng is the biggest, numerically speaking, it's the biggest province, but they only get 110 million. Whereas Limpopo is getting almost a billion. So what is the basis if it is not to work? For the same reason, KZN is the second largest, but KZN does is a question mark there. And then finally, if the Western Cape feel that they don't need the CDWs, firstly, are they filling the void? Because more of the work that is done by CDWs could easily be done by councillors. Is there feeling there, therefore, that there is no void and therefore no need for CDWs? And if there is no need, what happens to the budget? Is Western Cape returning the budget back to the fiscus, or are they using it for other projects? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Kumang. Lucky to the Honorable Nyakev.
Thank you, sir. I think the issue for me is what is the difference between the ward committee and community development workers? But if we can separate that, I think we will be able to deal with the responsibilities and how CDWs are supposed to operate. Because there's no term of office for community development workers. They are employed, they are public servants in a way. That's why the overall responsibility lies with the Department of Public Service and Administration. Because they are employed by government. So we can't run away from that. So with ward committees, they have a term. When the term of the ward councillor comes to an end, including their term also comes to an end. And ward committee members, they are not full-time. They are not employees. They are people who are doing that work. It's voluntary work what they are doing. So I think we can't compare the two. It's like to say, when you see a banana, you see an orange, you say, I have seen an orange. Even if it's a banana. So these are two different things. And I think that we must be careful of saying because this political party in this province, in that municipality, and the ward councillor comes from which political party. That has got nothing to do with community development workers who are employed by government. They're employed by government. So we can't determine their day-to-day work on the basis of who is leading in that province, who is leading in that municipality, who is the ward councillor in that ward. It can't be. Because if we do that, we'll be saying, because now it's the ANC that is the leading party in Ekurhuleni, so therefore, there must be no ward councillor that comes from another party. And this is disturbing because in my region, Ekurhuleni, in Gauteng, ward 43, if a DA councillor and there's a CDWU who is there, who is working very well with that ward councillor of that party, because that councillor doesn't ask the CDWU which political party do you belong to. Instead, the ward councillor says, my responsibility and at the level of local government, you are employed by the Public Service and Administration. So therefore, you have access in other departments. When I want those services, will it be easy for me, through you, to get those services for the people of my ward? That's how this is supposed to be. Rather than looking at whether suspect is this CW might be the member of the ANC. That's one point shared. I think the what I'm interested in, I think that there are questions that were raised, Deputy Minister, in relation to the issue of
one would regard as non-cooperation between your office as it is responsible for the CGWs throughout the country with the government of the Western Cape. And I would like to ask a question because the consultative workshop that is just that is reflected in the presentation, which took place in Oxford, in Ekurhuleni, in March. How did CGWs from different provinces went to that consultative conference? Was your department deputy minister responsible for the travel and accommodation of those CGWs who are coming from provinces? So I would like to you to enlighten me on that. And I think the last point for me, Chairperson, is that when one looks at the responsibilities of the CGWs, I think we must find a way, Deputy Minister, I don't know how, but I don't want to throw it. And it's something that the department once raised. I think it's in late 2011. I always keep on coming back on this issue. The issue of specialization of the CGWs, given the fact that they do work, I mean, link with different departments. How it can be done, I don't know, but I think Chairperson, if we can look at that, and it's important that in these meetings we also, in my constituency, what the CDWs do there, Chairperson, while they are located to each ward, there's one in each ward, but they do meet and say, in door-to-door, why don't we target a particular ward and all of us will go there and do door-to-door? Why should the CDW, who is attached to that ward, will continue to do that? But they have started that collectively in order for them to identify needs of the community and have a way of dealing with that. Thank you very much.
I'm sure
there
are lots of questions. Let me allow you to just respond. Most of the issues are raised, like the reporting line, the issue of employment. You did touch on that as well when we were speaking on this issue. But there's one also major issue that the Madhule is raising of the rural needs for community development, and you know the important task that plays. So what it actually says that in the rural areas, they're very critical. And let me allow you to go through the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll answer some of the issues by putting on my MP cap as well. And then I'll leave the officials to give you some of the technical. But if you remember, Honourable Chairperson, in my presentation, I did say part of the reason why we're wanting to link up with the local authority is precisely to ensure that we service the rural community effectively. And what Honourable Maluleka raises there is that the relation between the CGWs and other departments in province becomes a problem. And this is the reason why the President called for a meeting of all CGWs, and that is why we then went to all provinces in an endeavor to try and deal with some of these issues. Because if you get a president to address you, whatever it is that he thinks you become the directive, and that directive filters down to the premier, to the city, to the city manager, to the mayor, to everyone else. So it was in that light, really, that we decided that the president must address them because they become the directive to us. Not in the face of the nation address, but the directive to them to go and implement certain things. So that's exactly what happened with the CGWs. What is also very clear, and I think we need to move on the premise of trust when we deal with issues of our people. There could be instances where there are mistakes here and there could be negligence in certain areas, but largely we need to move on the premise of trust. because the city that this has been addressed on various occasions on matters relating to politics, and Honorable Mathilde has put it so well, I don't even have to respond on some of the issues that have been raised around the political connotations that play themselves out at the local level. And CPWs have been told in no uncertain terms by the President, by the Minister, by myself, by the Premier, that were part of the addresses, to say you should not, you will not, you are not allowed to get involved in political issues of the party, the latest issues that are political in the world in which you operate. And that came across very well, and it was very well understood by community development workers, to a point where if such things actually do happen, communities are expected to report that to us, and will then be able to deal with it. One of the issues that I've raised with community development workers, not just this time around, even in other interactions I've had with them over years, was that you cannot compete with councillors. Councillors are elected representatives of our people. And as Honorable Nyakem says, CPWs are civil servants, period. So they cannot compete with people who are not on the same level. In actual fact, they serve the council. So that's the understanding that needs to, that the country needs to grapple with. That if you want to use similar phrases which mean different things, or words that sound similar, a CPW is a councillor for state. And an elected representative is a councillor. S-E-L-L-O-R and C-I-L-L-O-R. Two different things. The other one, councils on behalf of the state. On matters relating to what I, and it was deliberate that I underlined that part that I underlined there when I was reading. But this is the role of the people. Beyond that, there is no other role. There is no political role. They have understood that. We have said to CPW, in talking about corruption, in talking about fraud and many other things that beget our society, including civil servants, we made very clear to CPW that you will not stand for election in a ward. Because that is tantamount to abuse of authority, abuse of office, abuse of power. And as such, we cannot compete with ordinary members of society who do not have the access that you have to resources, the access that you have to information, the access that you have to voters themselves, but also the access that you have to the president, to the minister, to whoever it is that holds office of authority. In that way, it was understood. You will not be able to do that because that is tantamount to abuse of authority, abuse of office, abuse of power. And we all know the consequences of that. So they also understand, because it has spelled out as clearly as that, that it is abuse of office, it's abuse of authority and power. Like I said, the president also emphasized this point. But it's a point that every time that I address CPW, I always tell you, this cannot happen. But you must also understand, at the time at which this was right, CPWs were not employed in the current dispensation that they're employed in right now. They were getting stipends, not salary. So that competition had to happen. That abuse of proximity to resources, it was bound to happen. But now, because they are civil servants, there is no way in hell that they can communicate, they can, I'm sorry if it is not parliamentary, that they can compete with elected representatives of our people. And the elected representatives are elected representatives, whether they are elected by people who support the ISP, the DA, it doesn't matter. The CPW must serve every council in the same way that they serve another. So the color, the affiliation, political affiliation, really should not matter. What matters is the people that have elected that individual as their representative. And Prof, you are right. Those were a bunch of very, very unhappy people. And I think these roadshows are turning the face of that unhappiness. And I think with time you will see a difference, because we're really truly working at ensuring that they're happy. We are looking at systems that will enable them to access information on time, for them to report on time on what they experience in the communities that they interact with, or the families that they talk to from time to time. So that information will not only reach
the mayor or the council. That information will come directly to the DPSA. So that's the kind of information that we need to use in our planning. We'll collect response versus service delivery, the implementation of the service delivery improvement framework. That information comes critical. So where they report will be dealt with in the framework as well, on the location and the conditions of service and all sorts of things. That is a process that we are currently faced with. So you, much as I say that they are unhappy, please be happy, honorable talk, they will be happy and they will serve the community as well, because we will ensure that they do their work effectively by providing the tools of the trade and a framework that is conducive for them to be able to do their work. On the coordination and lack of a legal framework, Colette will be able to respond to that. On the Western Cape, honorable members, this process has been ongoing since 2011, of ensuring that we have the yearly meeting, the yearly workshop between the president and the CDWs, and has been communicated to provinces. And again, going back to the issue of what they are encouraged to do, which has to also be very clear. We then decided that we should invite a representative sample from each province to come to the workshop because we couldn't accommodate all of them. But unfortunately, we did not get a response, a positive response from the Western Cape. All other provinces paid for their people to come to a workshop, if I'm correct for that, except the Western Cape, and the provinces that could not afford the number of people. We dated the DPSA for other things, but the province is also putting their 2 cents worth to ensure that the program became a success. It was a bit difficult from the Western Cape. At that time, the president requested me to present to the Presidential Coordinating Committee the report of the Open Government Partnership. And in that discussion, this also came up, that we will be visiting provinces on the OGP to make sure that we get as much information to be able to develop a report that makes sense and people can take ownership of. That was in presence of the Premier of the Western Cape. And when we then requested to come and do the same, that we had done in our provinces in the Western Cape, we were told that the CDWs would not be available. In all other provinces, the CCWs were there, traditional authorities in some other instances were there. In other instances, it was the Premier, as well as the MEC for local government. In other areas, the Premier was there, it was the MEC. But there was representation at the level of provincial cabinet, but also municipalities and all. And that wasn't the case with Western Cape. There was parallel to that process, we also had invited civil society organizations, we had invited business, academia, and in the Western Cape, it was only civil society organizations, academia, the media were also invited, and they all came except for the Western Cape leadership and also the CDWs in the Western Cape. And these were roundtable discussions to deal with some of the issues that provinces experience, both in terms of how they interact with the national sphere, but also in terms of the support that we had to present as per the instruction of the President to the Open Government Partnership meeting of the steering committee that was going to be held in the UK. So that is the story, Honourable Dutoy, with regards to that. And it doesn't take away the fact that CDW, as you say, Honourable Murray, are working in this problem. They probably do the best that I can. Truly, can I just have your hands this way? They truly do probably work in the world. That I cannot discount because when talking to them, they actually do work. But it's just that at the time at which they were required to come one and interact with the president on issues relating to the implementation of the program, but also on transparency, accountability and governance, they're not allowed to come. Even when we came to the front, they still were not there. But the third thing is that we were also unveiling a program of partnership to ensure that we assist with quality issues in provinces, and we do not want to single out the Western Cape. We want them to be a part of it. So the National Service Board has not gone to the Western Cape. So the people of the Western Cape who would require assistance in terms of accessing money from the National Service are not going to be able to do that. People in Mitchell's Plain who are semi-literate through the process of application. What is available, what should be applied for, and what the time frames are and the deadlines are. But in the Western Cape, unfortunately, the poor people of the Western Cape will not be able to address that. Thank you.
Actually, because we're going to have a follow-up meeting as well as activity minister on the progress that will be coming our way, and we still have another presentation. I don't know if the member still wants to continue. I was looking also at the issue of one to respond on this, that the city review might attach us on outcome 12, the area of citizens as well, possibly a coalition of what the government is doing.
I'm going to go to the next one. No, But we can try and have it when you get back.
Okay, I just hope those that are outside will find us on the way then, so that we can be able to adopt our items that are on the agenda. It is an important agenda item that we would like to give it a certain time and would like to rush over it. Because we're tight, we quickly have to go through the agenda item. But just to indicate that from the side of the department, most have left, of course, but they all have been here. They're with the acting DG, Mr. Gonzalo, who is there, and Mr. Cavella is here, Dr. Mahapa, Mr. Clark, Mrs. Manzini. Again, there were advisors, advocates who were here, advocates Melanie from Seattle, Mr. Mbata, other officials who were present, Mr. Cornelius, Nikki Iwe, Naidu, Nkwamba, that's not your son, I saw the son of the boy, Dibula, Shange, Kubulani, Nubelan, and Taitai. So those have been present for this meeting today. Now we're getting to the State Information Technology Agency. And the list I have with me that indicates the presence of a representative from State Information Technology. We all heard from the previous meeting that the minister has been trying to get the CEO to be on board, and she ended up succeeding. And therefore, the CEO of Women Nubalo is present today with us here. He's also a board member, Mr. Ngomezulu Kumbuzo. Having the CEO also present here. Yeah, we've got also within the strategy, right? Continuing strategy, Mr. Lineba. We've got also another senior manager in communication, Paul Grimsell. We have the head of stakeholder, Men Local Leader Joe. So those are here. Please, if there's somebody that wants to does this presentation, just in case who else is there, or they can just do a reintroduction, we don't mind. But what we really want is that we utilize the time as efficiently as possible. I am going to allow the speakers to proceed with the presentation. I take it that the CEO possibly will be leaving the process. I'm not sure what's the arrangement at this point in time. But can I then allow a human number to lead? Or the arrangement they actually put for themselves? Over to State Information Technology Agency.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I have moved. It looks like we have to move to this mic. It's the most efficient mic, I understand.
No, it's the position of number one.
So it's home for me. So I will be number one day. Okay, thank you very much. Just one extra person that we have is Tanya, our parliamentary liaison, she's sitting in the front. And Ms. Local leader, it's not Josie. The Senate said Josie. No, Josie. So I will take you through the presentation. But because I'm only 19 days old to the job, when the difficult questions are asked, my colleagues will answer all of the difficult questions. So this is the last time I'm able to use that excuse. So the presentation is going to deal with issues as indicated there. We can move to the next slide. The purpose of the Tusong Service Centers, I think we all understand, is about making sure that government is accessible to its citizens. All of the services that government, the customs that government provides, are able to be published in NHM and made available to the citizens. But there are certain factors that would make it successful on any sense. Any service center, for it to be successful, for it to function efficiently, you need to have certain things in place. The first one and the most important one, in our view, is that there must be ownership of that particular center. All the issues relating to the business model, the organizational structure, how the different institutions that are making the services available through that center are coordinated. And as the State Information Technology Agency, we take our cue from TBSA, but the information that we have, the ownership, the overall ownership of this seems to be residing elsewhere, seems to be residing with GCIS. But as an institution, we take our cue from TPSA. Then the issues of the facility readiness and access and existence of a building, power and electricity, all of those things are important because you can't then put a computer there when there's no electricity to make sure that that computer can function properly. And again, that would reside with the institution that takes the ownership of the center itself. And it's important that those things are there, because then everything else that gets done does have a direction, there is order, and we can hold different institutions accountable. Then there will be people in the center that are representing the different services that are being provided, which will be coming from the respective departments. To the extent that you then have those people that they need to be trained properly so that they know exactly what services are provided, where the information is right, which represents those services. But also, because some of the information where we come in as CETA would be information that would be made available electronically and through the use of technology, then we would need to train those workers that are working there in ensuring that they are able to respond to the needs of the communities in those areas. So they need to be trained, and the training will take place, and it would have to be done by the respective departments. To the extent that it's technology-based training, we would have to do that as CETA. The user departments, called the participating departments, could be Home Affairs, it could be Social Development, it could be any other department, they would have to have presence there so that the various services that they provide are properly represented. These things are important, whether you have the technology as an enablement or you don't. So all of those things are important for the service center to function. We come in as CETA to make sure that we then enable that process to happen efficiently and a lot quicker by creating the connectivity and providing the technology solutions to make it work. And that is the role that we play as CETA. And the maintenance of the whole area and the service center would be done through the institution that owns the business. We because we take our GPSA work, put this on GPSA, like I said at the beginning, our understanding is that, in fact, GCIS plays a very important role from an ownership point of view, and we wouldn't want to necessarily be the ones that change that. It needs to be changed. Now, what has happened since 2008 when this project started? The number of sites that had been identified where the community service centers had to be, which was about 246 because of the number of municipalities, 246 sites that were targeted to be enabled in this manner. And the target date, I understand it, is end of 2014. But we then did due diligence together with the Department of Services Administration, and we then identified that some of the institutions and some of the sites where these centers got to be do not have buildings in which they should be located. And as a result, we ended up being asked to provide connectivity to about 140 sites. So that's the work that we ended up being tasked to do. Out of that 140 sites, 17 sites could not do any work because either there are issues with the building or some other services like even water or electricity coming to those buildings. So those became the constraints, and then those 17 sites, there could be no connectivity going on. That leaves us with 123 sites. Of the 123 sites, we've got 27 sites that are in Gauteng. And those ones were put on hold, and we are waiting that Gauteng will give us the go-ahead at the right time. And of course, you know about the site where this issue was piloted at Maponya. I think the committee had visited that. So that leaves 96 sites where we did work and made all of the connectivity. Most of those 96 sites are in the rural areas, but some of them are obviously in towns. 91 of those sites were properly connected. All of the connectivity was done. 5 of the sites, there were some issues, and they have been connected, but they have not been commissioned. And the 5 sites as well, if you need that, one could talk to. So out of 140, we ended up with 96 sites having been connected properly. There was a budget for some of the work in relation to what had been invoiced. The budget for that, which had been invoiced, was about 35 million, and most of that has been paid, even though there is some work that was done earlier that that still needs to be paid. Now, what have been the challenges? I think the members would have picked up from the issues that I've been talking about, that there may have been obviously challenges with some of the sites where we couldn't do. One, we obviously need to make sure that we drive down the costs in relation to what government had to pay by making those services available to people in these areas, and that work is underway. Some of the work took long before it gets off the ground because of the agreement between CETA and the Paras institution particularly. We're not signed, and therefore you can't do the work at that point. And that work, that process is being addressed as I'm speaking now. The instructions to continue in relation to Gauteng, the 27 sites in particular, you still need to get that instruction to continue, then you can do the work and you can be paid for that work once you've done it. In terms of how efficient the centers are functioning, we obviously get some information in some of the sites, but there isn't sufficient information coming back as feedback in terms of how the sites, where there's been connectivity done, how are they functioning. There is some information that sits, as I would understand, GCIS in this regard, and having seen a presentation they did some time ago, it seems that they are getting some information. So we need to improve our way of gathering that information back to understand how the sites are functioning. But also, for the remainder of the activities, because once you've got a site functioning, you've got connectivity, you then have a menu of services that must be rendered through that particular site. You then, to the extent that you then need to automate some of those services, you obviously need those leading departments to participate in the process of doing user requirements and so on, so that you can then enable some automation of those services. The issue of business has been a difficult one, as I've indicated. That took out more than 100 sites. I think about 106 sites out of the 246 sites from eligibility, because there isn't work that you can do there. And of course, you've got a number of institutions that are participating in a particular center. We therefore need, from a coordination point of view, to create a proper reporting structure that will ensure that there's proper accountability. We then, having looked at all of these things later, we think that there is work we can do, but there's work that has to be done elsewhere. And there's recommendations to make sure that we go ahead and reach the target for this, is that we are in the process of revising some of the cost structures so that we can obviously deliver these things that are lower cost to government, and we hope that will be finalized pretty soon. The project sponsorship or champion, who owns a particular center, and it's important that question be properly addressed, and we on that score we defer to DPSA to help us get clarity on that with the other government departments that are there. We also urge that where the buildings are not in place or not properly identified, that process be done, and then we can get on with the work of ensuring that the remainder of the 146 sites are in fact provided with connectivity and the services that government wishes to make available to communities through vendors can be made possible. And is CETA ready to do this? What is it that is needed for CETA to be ready? It's obviously to have all of the agreements in place that we need before we do the work that we have to do, but also to make sure that we've got our, from a resource point of view, we've got the people that will do this work ready. I must point out that in the 96 sites that have functioned, because of the last step of the connectivity to the center, that part we rely on the infrastructure from Telkom. So from some of the sites, you will find that yes, the site is functioning and the services are being provided, but there might be glitches here and there because of the efficiency of that last mile connectivity which is received through Telkom. We're in engagement with Telkom as well to see how can that rectified. In terms of the other services that are provided from an e-government perspective, we have we have made ready a number of forms, and we continue with engagement with departments to make sure that we continue to automate a lot of the forms so that communities can find those easily available. And the website indicates which departments we've worked with in this instance to make some of these forms electronically available. Chair, that is the position. We have the resources in terms of people to do the work. We're finalizing the agreements where the agreements are not yet finalized, and we obviously would want that for the other part that makes this project successful, which is ensuring that there are buildings, there's infrastructure in those buildings in terms of electricity and running water and so on. Those parts as well are done, and then we should when those are addressed, be able to then progress with the automation in those system service centers before the time when it's needed to be finalized. Thank you.
Thank you. So quite brief and to the point. And let me allow the members to interact with the presentation. As we saw the client, Honorable Williams, Honorable Du Bois, the two of you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got a couple of questions. You haven't really given us a lot of detail of where these 96 sites are, and that you said they had problems reporting their functioning. So I take it that we will get a report on the functioning of these, the ones that are actually up, and where they're situated, which provinces, and if you could even be more specific in which districts, regions they are. Also, looking forward, is CEDA working with the DPSA on the future sites to look at them? Because fundamentally what can happen is a site can be identified by the DPSA, but the minute that you get there, you can say that this site won't work for us for connectivity. So you should be working together on selecting future sites. No, that's it. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Williams. Honorable Drake.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just trying to grapple here with the holistic view around this. We have about how much... I think about 300 or so municipalities, is that correct? How many do we have? No? 22. Okay. Right, now, I take into consideration that some of them are very dense, and some of them are very stretched out. We want to have an integrated service center in every municipality. We're looking at, let's say, more than 300. I know, I think in my area we've got two actually, and plus the main building of the municipality, it's supposed to be accessible, and we've got home affairs there, and then we've got outlying areas. So I'm just looking at a model here of one or two towns, quite dense, linked with the roads. So there's taxi links, there's rail links, you can take, there's three stations actually, so you can take a train from one area to the other. In fact, right up to the top, Gouda, on top of the Ravenstein. But I don't understand, I mean, if we've got more government offices or municipal offices or centers of points, then it's a vision. In just in that area, so we've got maybe one or two extra tourism centers, might say a satellite extension of the municipal structure, you know, network. And if we are looking forward to, like you indicated, that we want to get a one-stop shop of all government business close together and accessible, the figures doesn't make sense. I mean, what are we looking here at? How many tourism centers do we want to have? 500, 1,000 in the country, you know? What are we looking at here? And if we are looking at now, we've got 100 and something, how much is it? We've got much less now, just under 100. But we've already had a more than 500 1,000 access points for the public in South Africa. There's 300 municipalities. I've got my one, I've got the main building, I've got some others, I've got the home affairs, I've got the two centers, so it can go on. So One is that 5, 6, and 8 points. You know, former small, smaller towns were now put together in a bigger municipality. So it's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 points already in one municipality. Now, 300 municipalities, so it shows you 3,000. You know, we're looking at 3,000 entry points. So what is, I don't understand how this works with the Tucson Center. What does it make now? Why don't we just don't incorporate the training and the stuff in the existing points? Or is the Tucson Center not, just, is it another extra center, that's what I'm saying? You know, is it an extra point of entry? What's the philosophy around this? Because is it the figure doesn't gel, it doesn't look like the same to solve the problem if you're just looking at a few hundred. It's got to be thousands. That's what my logic system. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Gauteng. Who gave instructions and why? I've read the reasons for this. To some centers is for people to get services nearer. And I know that you're not responsible to say there must be to some center here. So your responsibility, if somebody else does know that the Tucson Center are here, you come and connect and put IT. I think that's your responsibility. And I think I'm interested to share on the issue of the buildings. Yes, you are informed that there's this building. Now you find that the building is not ready or is not adequate for you to continue the work. If possible, do you have knowledge of the public works who is responsible for this building or is another government department? Just those.
Yeah, so those are the questions that are put forward. Can I allow Sita Chu to respond?
Thanks, Chair. I think my colleagues will help me where I think the questions perhaps just from the presentation one can deal with them. We are the 96 sites, we do have the details and we can make the detail available to the committee who will email it. But it's across most of the provinces. Where the centers are, so we'll make that available. For future sites, definitely, we to the extent that whether it's TBSA or some other entity that helps to drive the process, we wanting to create a better cooperation and those working relationships so that when we identify the basis, we're able to then have all of the features at least being there. We want to ensure that the other institution has to do so, but we will be working with them so that the sites identified are accessible to communities, but at the same time have got the infrastructure that is necessary. I think somebody else has to deal with the issue of the number of sites, but there are places where already services are accessible. I think my understanding of the Tucson centers is to make services accessible in areas where services were not accessible. So you're not going to have extrapolation necessarily of the number of government offices, but it's about services being available in areas where those services are not available and being available as a package. If you go to a rural community, you've got a social development, you've got a home affairs, and so on, so that people can have enabling documents very, very easily and so on. So the numbers aren't necessarily going to correlate to the government offices that you have. But it's about ensuring that in those areas where you can't reach, therefore you may have numbers. I will not speak into saying why do you have 246 or so many as an identification. I wouldn't know that. But just from the numbers point of view, the numbers aren't going to necessarily be a mirror of that. But the numbers must be driven by the need on the ground, as I would understand it. My colleagues will talk to who gave instructions, but the the issue of the buildings again, we're not going to be able to say this building would be public works or that other department. From where we sit as CETA, if whoever is the business owner, whether it's CBSA or GCIS, says there is a center here, we expect that particular institution to make sure that public works or whomever else is supposed to make the building available, sort those issues out so that we can decide that we can that we're responsible to do. So that's the take. Can I leave my colleague maybe also in the call to address some of the issues?
Thank you, sorry, Chairperson. The instructions currently we take the instructions on the connectivity of two form centers from the GPSA. So they're going to instruct us. We don't deal with the Gauteng government. So that's why. Thank you.
I think maybe if one looks at the two strong centers, it also comes with a history. And if one looks at answering the question in terms of buildings, it's not about state buildings, about buildings, whether they're in municipalities, whether they're in government, whether they are buildings identified in a rural community, because one of the main issues with the two strong centers was also to reduce the traveling of poor people to government institutions so that we could bring government institutions closer to poor people. Now, if one looks at the amount of points of presence or customer premise environments, we currently serve over 7,000 of them. But here we're looking at those critical masses. Now, if we look at the design of the two strong centers from a business perspective, I'm not even talking about the technology perspective, the one portion, the front end of the two strong centers to give internet capability to the citizens in that environment to get access to e-government information. If they can't do it, it goes to the second portion. The second portion within the two strong center is the shared government service center, which will assist those people to do that work. And from there, they also get directed to the departments that are at that point in time present at the two strong centers. One of the big issues with the two strong centers that sometimes crops up is that because departments are not always permanently situated at that point, they do send representatives from the nearest town to a two strong center to provide those services. Now, one of the big ticket items there is to try and secure the government information so that it stays within the enterprise servicing citizens. Now, if we look at the municipalities, they have different networks, different trusted units. We are working at that, trying to get that right as well. So I think the future will be a collaborative government. But this is the first step. And where it came from was in 2000 was called the MPCCs, Multiple Purpose Community Centers, which was attempted by USASA to sponsor and build these environments where they could serve the citizens. They worked on getting donations and second-hand equipment, and in the end of the day, there was no structure and governance in that environment. And this is where DPSA came in and started providing that. I think the next phase is to get true governance, and I think the stuff that the CEO has spoken about. We need to get those things in place to say, if we're going to do the rest of the two strong centers, it becomes a mature organization, and needs to become a mature organization. That's just my 5 cents. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, thanks, Chair. In case of I nearly said that. In case of what the CEO, we are finalizing the issue of the patient in case of the ownership, SDPS in case of the connectivity, as we said, those figures, it's what we are paying for to make sure that the centers are well connected. And then the other issue is when we talk about integrated services, is that we identify very critical departments that can assist the community in reaching that service easily. We know from the patient perspective, in case of the home affairs, it's very, very critical for the IDs, the certificates, and all those things. And when you look at the poor community, they don't have enough funds to be able to reach the towns or the events or whatever it might be. So for us, priority that we identify such critical department that can be able to assist home access, electricity, whatever it might be, where it can be accessible. In case of the staff, it's not a duplication, because when we get into agreement with the department, they usually second their staff from their own department to go and assist that side so that it can function. The issue of the building, ultimately, in case of any government processes with regard to the building, the DPW is engaged on the matter. You know, need assessment is done, and then we identify the site, they come on board, and we follow those processes until they say this building is suitable for to be utilized. But also statistics counts. If honorable members can be able to take the register and check the one that you are calling the Paponya map to see how many people are entering a day, it shows that really now people are now reaching a service site, because we've got a large number of people getting in, because it becomes easier. They go shopping, and then after shopping, a certain thing that I've forgotten, the ID or driver's license is lost and all those things, and then they usually access such services there. But at the same time, as we are saying, we're still identifying other critical departments that can be able to assist in case of giving services at health centers, which is modeled around Maponya's urban mall in case of what you call the Tucson centers. That is all that I have.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm aware of the time. I'm not too long. Thanks for the answer. It gives us a better picture. I was just thinking, wondering. Yes, certainly there's a distinction between the more urban, densely populated areas, well-served, and those in the outlying areas where it's begin. I understand it completely. And also the difficulties goes with it, and also with the different systems. I understand that. I was just thinking, you know, when you need 24-hour security, you need a presence. People may come from an area and they might be late, you know, and they're willing to sit in a waiting room until the next morning. I don't understand why we don't link this to the police stations. I mean, we've got a lot of police stations which automatically can give security and supply security to all the systems that we have there. I mean, people's not going to break in there because they're 24 hours on, you know, wide awake, aren't they? So then, you know, your computers won't be stolen. I was thinking, if you ever thought about it, in the rural areas or other areas, combining security and medical assistance, you can have cross-training between your police, your medical, the nurse, the... I understand also that people will come in on a Tuesday or a Thursday from the next town. But at least then you will have a secure spot. I'm just thinking if you've ever thought about that. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
That's a question. No. Before we even think about an idea, we do what is called a business case, you know. And then it will be able to tell us in case of the feasibility study to say what is needed, what you need to do, whatever it might be. And you get into argument with our institution. And each and every institution has got their own way of operating. And then if the argument is reached, then we agree to say this is how we can be able to do things. But in case of security, as we are saying now Tucson centers are located at GCIS. We assist in case of the connectivity and make sure that there are security. If there are any problem, we sit together and be able to identify the problem to say how DPSA can be able to assist on that matter. This is what we are doing daily with them. And as I say, in case of the location, I think we also had a meeting to say, can we really identify the real location of the GCIS so that if there are concerns, not GCIS, I'm sorry, of the Tucson centers, we know the one point to reach in case of the conflict. I think the DG has just elaborated now to say that CAP member is going to be finalized, and then so that we say if GPSA takes over, the whole process of the Tucson centers will take an ownership on that matter. And the other issue is the cost, because nowadays, even if you say you do an agreement, CEPS or whatever it might be. In case of the personnel that you take from CEPS, for their allowance, data allowance, if they sit there, you have to pay as a department. So that is why we have introduced what we call a cost recovery model, in case of all the departments that are assembled in one place to see if LDPA says this is how much we spent and then how much are we going to recover for the service that we render. And also for that department, how much are they paying back for the space that they are utilizing for those centers so that we can continue the content connectivity. Because if we keep on paying those 34 million, we can't sustain it if we don't do a cost recovery model so that we recover funds and then we continue in order to make sure that others are connected. Thank you.
Okay, I think it's just one major issue, but I'm not sure how we're going to raise it. But in terms of the interaction and the engagement, you might know, we might have, we do need to get it to how we're going to solve the GSIS matter. But the engagement, are we somewhere with the discussion? But I think, you know, but you see the issue of the two services, the same as if you look at the CDW, we don't really get the proper accountability where they reside and so on. And they create a problem. And if you look at, both of them are very critical for the delivery for the people down there. And therefore, that's one major issue for me. I don't know whether there has been engagement. Give us a few clue, where is it, or could still come back to us after some time. I'm really worried about that accountability aspect. You know, it's completely unclear and it's going to take problems over. No matter what good language you can speak about, but there is this matter here. Can I just request that bit of clarity?
Thanks, yes. As I indicated, we are approaching cabinet. It's not going to be that far. We had an engagement with GCIS. While the engagement were advanced, I think Colette Clark was also part of those engagements by that time. Unfortunately, by that time, by the way, the spokesperson, Mr. Manya signed by the time. The engagement were at advanced level in case of making sure that the issue of the location is resolved. And then ultimately started, I think it was Colette also and the DG, Bikova, who attended that last meeting in case of the engagement. So that is why I'm saying that the head memo is ready for the discussion so that it can be able to be presented to the cabinet so that we have a clear understanding of the location and the ownership.
Yeah, because you know, it goes along with what Prof. Usman raised last time. Once you go to the center, you really find that kind, even of all the people who are working there, that's completely unclear. And we do need this centers. We need the CWs. I think we're going to put it, you know, consistently on what, and that to pressurize the department and all those concerns to do something about it. We'll put pressure points at various levels, including other levels besides the committee's level. But surely you understand why, you know, once you do that. So, rest assured, it's not going to move away from your table. You know, it's not like Mahapa. I know that your CEO is still planning to accountant general. I know a CEO, and you know, a CEO will definitely come back, you know, maybe next week on this matter. I think the truth of them, immediately you can get them running, and including all those obstacles you have identified. If we can deal with them, I think we do need them. We can have something available for our people. And remember, I hope we have exhausted this, but also, even if we haven't, time is exhausted on our side. But at least it's a matter that is on our agenda. We'd really appreciate that you also have taken, you know, the leave from the minister to be part of the DITA. We believe that it's been part of progress as well, you know, in terms of making sure that all the work that has been done by DITA, the good work, is retained, and we're ensuring that the challenges that are there, and you know, we cross over, and we have a well-functioning DITA. I would like to thank everyone else for being part of this meeting, and thank you, members, for doing your task force, and actually communicate in terms of all the program for coming time. For now, I'll end the meeting and rush to the next meeting.
Thanks.